caused by religion's misguided men. There is no holiness in war, only death's unholy stain. God is only love, His love is pure. Yeah. The word of God can never justify revenge. Vengeance belongs to Him and Him alone. We must all seize our jihad and raise our enemy.
Lock up your husband. Lock up your sons. Lock up your whiskey cabinets.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 and Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award. issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 911, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these goober heads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they publish the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shriek the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation and gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live today, the 7th of July, coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. So much in the news. Did you hear? This just came out. The 9/11 Commission has officially called Dick Cheney a liar. Well, they didn't use that word, but the effect is identical. Dick Cheney on the Capitol Report. He was talking with Gloria Borger. This was on June 17th, just a couple of weeks ago. Dick Cheney said that. Basically, well, he says, well, Gloria, the notion that there is no relationship between Iraq and al-Qaeda is simply not true. I mean, there are reams of material here. Your show isn't long enough for me to read all the pieces of it. And she says, say what? You know, we didn't know that there was a connection between Saddam and Osama, or al-Qaeda and Iraq. She says, do you know some things the commission does not know? He says, probably. And, she says, then, and do you think the commission needs to know them? He says, I don't know what they know. I do know they didn't talk with any original sources on this subject that say that in their report. Borger says, they did talk with people who had interrogated sources. Cheney says, right. And you know, then he goes into his rant about, you know, your show isn't long enough for me to read all the pieces of. Well, the panel says, sorry, ain't the case. This news release today, in fact, here's the story from the New York Times by Philip Shannon. The leaders of the commission investigating the September 11 attacks on Tuesday disputed Vice President Dick Cheney's suggestion. It came out yesterday. It's in today's paper. Suggestion that he probably had access to more intelligence than the commission did about disputed this. About possible ties between the Al-Qaeda terrorist network in Iraq. In a one-sentence statement, the panel's chairman and vice chairman, the Republican and the Democrat together, the chairman and the vice chairman said, quote, after examining available transcripts of the vice president's public remarks, this is a direct, you know, here in your face, Dick Cheney. After examining available transcripts of the vice president's public remarks, the 9/11 Commission believes it has access to the same information the vice president has seen regarding contacts between Al-Qaeda and Iraq prior to the 9/11 attacks. Now, what's significant about that? What's significant about that is that Philip Shannon in the New York Times goes on to note, the report issued by the commission staff last month found that there is not a relationship, there is not a collaborative relationship between Iraq and the terrorist network. A finding, the Times notes, that appeared to undermine a justification cited by President Bush and Mr. Cheney for invading Iraq and toppling Saddam Hussein. No weapons of mass destruction, no connection to Al-Qaeda whatsoever until we showed up. And then Saddam had to, you know, we stood down the Iraqi army. They're no longer protecting the borders there. And the borders opened up, and guess who shows up? Why? Well, because, you know, because George W. said, bring them on. You know, here's some American soldiers. Here's some targets for you guys. Come on over. This is grim. This is just plain old, flat out grim. Anyhow, a Berlusconi alert. Yes, the official national anthem of Italy. Silvio Berlusconi, you may recall, is the small-time crook and businessman whose partner just was sent off to jail for bribery. His charges are in abeyance while he is serving as prime minister. But he bought a radio station, then bought a TV station, then bought another radio station, and has ended up owning now 90% of the radio, television, and newspaper media that people in Italy see, hear, and read. All by himself. He's the richest man in Italy now. Silvio Berlusconi. And once he owned all that media, he said, hey, let's run for office. And he created his Italia Firenze party, and he ran for office, and surprise, surprise, the media all supported him, and he won! Well, he's in the news here. This in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, Italy is in trouble, because Berlusconi has been following conservative economics, Bush 101, and Bush-Reagan 101, I guess you could say, because it's all, you know, this whole theory really first kind of came out of the closet in the early 80s with Reagan, that you bankrupt a government, run it deeply into debt, and then use that as an excuse to slash social programs to do away with socialism, like, you know, free public education or health care or Social Security. Now, they still want a socialist military, you know, paid for the government, paid for by the government, but not anything that's going to help the average person. And even if the average person wants it, gee, they voted that. No, they didn't vote those people in to do that. Those people were buying their votes by offering them Social Security. Didn't you know that? No. Well, in any case, Berlusconi has run Italy into the red so badly that the European Union said, you've got to get your debt below 3% of your gross domestic product, or Brussels is going to trigger a, quote, early warning end quote, which is going to downgrade Italy's debt and cause their interest rates to spike and cause all kinds of havoc in Italy. And so Berlusconi says he's going to cut $9.2 billion in public spending, but he's also going to have to toss out a $1.3 billion tax break for insurance companies and banks that he was planning on offering them. And he's going to boost the retirement age for people in Italy, and he's going to slash pension payments, which are handled by the government in Italy. The heavy spending cuts, Mr. Berlusconi must now push through Parliament, notes Luca Di Leo in Brussels, who contributed to this article for the Wall Street Journal. The heavy spending cuts Mr. Berlusconi must now push through Parliament leave him little room to maneuver. Mr. Berlusconi has also promised broad tax cuts for individuals and businesses. We know who those individuals would be, right? At the very top, of course. Yesterday, he insisted he would deliver on those pledges next year, but he promised the EU that any tax cuts would be financed with further spending cuts, a move which may be difficult to get past his coalition. In other words, even the Parliament is probably not going to go along with this. Berlusconi might have backed himself into a corner. We're going to get into how George Bush has done the same. I found particularly interesting in the context of our Berlusconi alert an article in today's New York Times. It's the article, the headline, it's by Jane Perlez. The headline is, "She Tilts Against Power, But Don't Call Her..." Now, is that quixotic or chaotic? I don't know how to pronounce that word. It's one of those words that I've read ever since I was a little kid, and I should have looked it up in the dictionary. Anyhow, Quixo, yeah, as in Don Quixote, you know. Anyhow, the country's biggest media and communications company, the Shin Corporation, which now owns the only independent television network in Thailand. This is the country of Thailand. The Shin Corporation owns the only independent television network. The other television network is owned by the government. So there's two. Is owned by Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra. In other words, the family of the guy who is the head of Thailand owns the only television, the only independent television network in Thailand, and he's now the head of government, so he runs the government-controlled TV and radio. And it's not run like BBC or PBS, where it's, at least theoretically, independent of the government. It's actually run by the government. It's the lone private channel. It's called ITV. It was just taken over last year by the Prime Minister's family. And there's this woman who has come out and said, this is wrong. We should have freedom of the press. And his corporation is suing her for libel. And she's saying, hey, this is a great opportunity to get into a courtroom and maybe get some of this stuff in front of, you know, in front of reporters and the news and that kind of thing. And in part, this ties back to an article that was in a Thai newspaper called The Nation in June, which published a list of 16 people that called the dead and the missing, people who had, you know, environmentalists, civil rights advocates, freedom of speech advocates who had spoken out against the administration and now are either dead or missing. And the New York Times notes, since the rise of Mr. Thaksin, who is sometimes likened here to the Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, those voices find it harder to be heard. Nobody is suggesting that the government is picking off local activists. See, the activists are like dying, like they're dropping like flies around Thailand. Rather, they say, the government is not out killing them. Rather, they say, there has been a blossoming climate of commerce at any cost that has given criminal actors, whom the government professes to want to eliminate, the leeway to protect their interests with impunity. In other words, the logging companies that are the whistleblowers are calling on, the logging companies are killing off these people. The chemical companies that are dumping chemicals, and you've got environmentalists. The environmental suddenly is dead. It was the chemical company, and see, this is the end product. This is the absolute predictable end product of the conservative notion that there should be no restraints on corporate activity. The end product is as our founders so clearly pointed out, you know, when Jefferson said, I hope we shall put to death at its birth the rise of corporate power in America, that the dangerous rise, that tyranny is the bottom line. Our quote for the day, by the way, from George Washington. As mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. What? Government is supposed to protect us? From whom? Of civil government, domestically. Interesting. He goes on to say, I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. First President of the United States, George Washington. A lot in the news today. Mark Kirk, just a quickie here. Mark Kirk, the congressman from Illinois, who has been an outspoken supporter of the Patriot Act, voted against investigating the CIA, against the 9/11 Commission, you know, 9/11 inquiries. Turns out he's been secretly working for the CIA at the same time he's serving in Congress. Is Lee Goodman, his Democratic opponent, says the conflict of interest is blatant and appalling. Congress has been struggling to investigate intelligence failures by the CIA. Now it turns out Kirk is working for the CIA. No wonder he wouldn't vote to investigate those failures after 9/11. A little problem there in Illinois. It's Tom Hartman, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes before, after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Economic outlook, a strong year. Interesting story in today's newspapers, the Associated Press story. The economy appears headed for a banner year, according to Martin Krutzinger, writing for the AP. Why? He asks, rhetorically. Well, according to the Associated Press, the reason we're heading for a banner year is because the majority of analysts that the AP surveyed, although they don't give any information about that, maybe just the ones that they called, analysts are forecasting that the economy, as measured by the gross domestic product, will grow by 4.6% or better, the fastest in two decades. I find this fascinating. They quoted, for example, Diane Swank, who is an economist at Bank One in Chicago. And now, again, of course, a corporate economist is not going to be saying, when they talk about the economy, they're not going to be talking about the lives of working people. They're going to be talking about corporate profits. That's the economy that they're looking at. And she says, we are moving into a sweet spot for the economy. With interest rates not too high, jobs coming back, and business investment providing strength. And I think she makes a good point. It is very similar, actually, assuming that it's actually happening. And there are some strong indicators that it's not. But assuming that it is, for the minute, it's real similar to what happened, well, they say this, the fastest economic growth in 20 years. 20 years ago was the middle of the Reagan administration. And, of course, Ronald Reagan took us from having a debt of under $1 trillion to having a debt of over $2 trillion. We're still spending. We're going to, this year, your and my taxes are going to pay over $100 billion on interest on the debt that Ronald Reagan ran up 20 years ago so that he could have economic good times to get reelected. You remember? Those of you who are old enough, those of you who remember 20 years ago, I mean, it was, everybody was talking about it. The people were out saying, hey, you know, you give me a credit card with $2 trillion on it and let me go just spend it like crazy here in the United States, you know, with defense companies, Star Wars and this and that and the other thing, and I'll show you a good economy. You know, you give me a credit card with a $2 trillion line of credit on it. I can make it look like things are really good. And here now we have George W. Bush has taken our deficit, our debt, our national debt now up to $6 trillion. Bill Clinton actually reduced it. George W. has increased it again. The same thing. Now Reagan, to his credit, had to back off from that. But Bush, no, he's not going to. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number if you'd like to be on the air. Mike in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
How are you doing, Tom? I sure appreciate your show.
Thank you.
You know, I wonder if you could help me. I'm not a real smart person, but I wonder, how is the national debt financed?
Well, there you go. The national debt is financed by the Treasury Department selling securities, Treasury bills, everything from savings bonds to T-bills and T-notes. And a good chunk of it, actually, right now is being bought by the Chinese and the Japanese and the Saudis.
Now, Treasury notes, if I'm not mistaken, are like $10,000 minimum, aren't they?
Yeah, and they typically, you know, most of them mature in 20 years.
Yeah. So I guess not a lot of regular folks buy many Treasury bonds, do they?
No, although the Bush family is well invested in them.
I'm sure. Yeah. You know, I saw an editorial in a paper a couple months ago that said since the budget deficit's blooming, the trust fund managers are just beside themselves with places to park their money with, index for inflation even. I mean, it's
that's right.
Crazy.
Which brings us to inflation, which is what I want to talk about right after this break. But yeah, you raise a really good point, Mike, and let me chew on it a little bit here right after the break. Thanks for the call.
Great to hear from
you there in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom Hartman here with you, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum, a public citizen, outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Yeah, the champions, like George Washington, as mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. Yes, the champion of the world, George Washington, general and president, first president of the United States. Welcome back. Michael Kinsley wrote a great op-ed piece about this very issue that Mike from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania raises, which is, what are you going to do with a $4.4 trillion debt and a $500 billion deficit? Now, in my statements before, I'm not sure. I might have, you know, it is so easy to do, mix up those words. And I think, you know, frankly, the average American doesn't realize that there's even a difference between the debt and the deficit, and they don't realize what the two are. Our debt is the long-term amount of money that this government owes to people who have bought our IOUs. Our IOUs are called Treasury bills, Treasury notes, savings bonds. That's our deficit. That's our debt. Excuse me. Our deficit is how much in each individual year we are having to additionally borrow and thus add to our debt in order to pay the bills. This year we're going to have to borrow about $500 billion. Now, the only reason that that's not $670 billion is because about $170 billion, more or less, of Social Security surplus this year is being spent by the Bush administration directly out of the general fund. They're issuing Social Security IOUs as well, but those don't show up as part of the debt. It's a funny little accounting trick. They've been doing it now for 3 years. Between $150 and $200 billion every year of the Social Security Trust Fund's surplus has been spent by the Bush administration. So anyhow, how do you handle? You know, Reagan came into office, the national debt was under a trillion. It was a few hundred billion dollars, which is not insubstantial. I mean, JFK was elected on a platform of wiping out the debt that was left over from World War II. This was in 1960, right? 20 years after World War II. And he was elected on that platform, in part. And you know, really the first president to take a shot at it, a real serious shot at it. Jack Kennedy took a shot at it, sort of. But the first one to really make a dent was Bill Clinton, oddly enough. And, or not oddly enough. I mean, you know, it's what he said he was going to do, and he did. Bill Clinton did some okay things. You know, we have to acknowledge that. Ronald Reagan came in and began this starve the beast strategy, and the conservatives loved it. At least the corporate conservatives loved it, and the libertarian style conservatives loved it because it accomplished two things, three things really. One, it enriched the rich. I mean, cutting the top tax rate from 70% as Reagan did down to 30 whatever it was. What did he take it down to? 28? 32? 36? Something in that range. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. You know, the millionaires and billionaires were all saying, that, number one. Number two, those who thought and continue to think, those who believe that Social Security and Medicare and ultimately even public education, that public education should be replaced with vouchers, and, you know, that's like a step toward privatizing education, that all of those things really shouldn't be the functions of government. They should be handled by private corporations. We should put our trust in private for-profit corporations for our retirement, our health care, and the education of our children. We should not be trying to do that for ourselves through the instrument of government that we elect and that represents us. This is the conservative perspective. And, in fact, if we decide that we want to do that for ourselves, that we would prefer to administer our own health care money in a nonprofit fashion so nobody can skim anything off the top, thank you very much. We would prefer to administer our own pension, our own retirement, our own Social Security in a way that nobody can skim anything off the top. No corporation's going to make any money, thank you very much. That to do that, to say that, is to be socialist. All right, that's the conservative talking point. We would like to manage our own educational system through locally elected school boards. And we'll pay for it with our tax dollars. We'll tax ourselves, we'll have our own schools. And we'll all benefit from a well-educated populace.
Oh, no, that's socialism. That's terrible. Corporations should be doing that. Look at what Chris Whittle's doing here.
Of course, Chris Whittle is not having great successes these days, but the cons don't talk about that so much. But anyhow, it accomplishes that as a second goal. That is, it wipes out the social safety net. And as a third goal, it enhances the power of those who then end up controlling our pensions and our health care and our education and everything else. Right? I mean, they basically get control of the government. If they're going to do those functions, if we're going to be dependent upon them. So, you know, it's like a win-win-win on the conservative side, running the country into debt until the bill has to be paid. And that's why occasionally they say, well, let's let a Democrat get elected, you know. Let them take the heat for this. Now, you know, in all fairness, I should add that, you know, the inflation that Jimmy Carter inherited was in large part due to the economic policies of Lyndon Johnson. You know, let's have a war and let's have a great society at the same time. And let's not raise taxes. You can't do that. You can't have what, you know, was referred to back then in the 60s as guns and butter. Doesn't work. Ultimately, we have to pay. So there's a couple of ways that you can deal with this debt, which Reagan ran up to a couple of trillion, and now Bush has run up to over 4 trillion right now, and projections are that if nothing changes over the next 10 years or so, it's going to be 6 trillion. Over the next 20 years, it could be as much as $15 trillion. Keep in mind, before Reagan came into office, the United States had never seen a debt of $1 trillion. It's just amazing. We're paying hundreds of billions of dollars a year in interest on this debt, which further starves the beast. Right? Okay, so how do you handle it? Number one, you live with it, but that, you know, you just can't do that. You can't live with that much debt. When you've got an amount of debt that is so great that a third or a quarter or a third of all government taxes are being just paid in debt service, that's unsustainable. That's like, you know, somebody living on their credit cards to the point where their credit cards are, you know, hitting $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, and the interest that they're having to pay on their credit cards is sucking up a third of their income. You can't go on. You just can't do it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of Americans who are finding themselves in that situation. The second way that you deal with it is with what's called fiscal discipline, which means you stop spending money. And that's what, of course, Alan Greenspan just recently suggested. Let's just do away with Social Security. We'll begin hacking away at the thing. We'll raise the retirement age and we'll cut benefits. My mother-in-law is living on Social Security. I can tell you, You do not, living on Social Security is not an easy thing in America. This is a tough one. And you know, God bless her. I mean, it's and all the people who are trying to live on Social Security, and it's a challenge. The third way that you can get through is if you have, as Kinsley says, an explosion of productivity. In other words, you know, just economic boom times that raise tax revenues, that, you know, that goose the economy up to the point where you've got enough added tax revenue that you can start paying down the debt, which is essentially what happened for Bill Clinton. The dot-com boom. The computer boom. The internet boom. But, you know, you can't count on those things just coming around every few years. They tend not to. I mean, there was a big boom in the 20s as a result of the radio industry. Interestingly, you know, the RCA was the Microsoft of the 1920s. They went from nothing to being just absolutely huge. And interestingly, they were selling radios on, they pioneered this, RCA pioneered this, in the 1920s, in the early 1920s. They pioneered selling radios on time. This is the first time that Americans had actually gone into debt. RCA said, you know, we'll loan you the money, and you can buy a radio with it. And RCA's stock was going up, and all the radio companies, radio stations. I mean, there was this boom going on as a result of radio in the 20s that was lifting the stock market, and there was very little regulation on the stock market, and so people would go to stockbrokers, and the stockbrokers would say, well, you know, you can buy. I'll loan you 90%. You put in 10%. You can buy stock. And this got everybody into the stock market. And it created this stock market bubble that was riding on the back end of the radio bubble, which was riding, which was enhancing itself, speeding itself up with a debt bubble. Americans were going into debt in unprecedented ways, and this is why when the market crashed in 29, it took down so much of the infrastructure of the American economy because so many people were so badly in debt. Not just to buy radios. I mean, RCA started it with radios, but people started buying other things on time as well. It became a kind of a fad in the 20s. And so the dominoes just all fell. Well, we have a similar situation now, only the debt is mostly in people's homes or on their credit cards, both of which are very, very vulnerable to increased interest rates, which brings us to the last way, the fourth way that you can get rid of your debt. This is what Germany chose to do in the 1920s, when after World War I, they were saddled with the Treaty of Versailles, which said that they had to make reparations. They had to pay back the countries of Europe for the damage that they had done in World War I. So all of a sudden, Germany was just hit with this huge debt. They had to pay England, you know, 400 million marks, and they had to pay France 300 million, whatever it was. You know, I don't know the details, but don't have them here in front of me. But they had. So what they did was they said, okay, that's fine. We'll just start printing marks, and they inflated their currency so it became worth less and less and less. So they could pay off France with, you know, a month's worth of income, ultimately. I when I was a kid, I collected postage stamps. I had a million mark stamp. 1 million marks to mail a letter. That's like $1 million. I mean, when Germany repudiated the mark, when they left behind the mark and adopted the euro, this was, what, about 5-6 years ago? Something like that, 4 years ago. The mark was worth, as I recall, around 88 cents, something on that order, a little less than a dollar. This is a million of these things to mail a stamp in the 1920s. And that, you know, that's what happens when inflation gets out of control. And Kinsley points out that if you have a huge debt, he says investors aren't complete idiots. If they know that the government's going to inflate the currency, they're going to demand higher interest rates to compensate. And he says that that is what has been happening lately. He also points out, and I thought this was a really interesting observation in this piece, Bush's budget balancing plan, Inflation, by Michael Kinsley. He points out that inflation tends only to happen about once every generation. A generation is about 20 years. He says, if you have to ask, he says, what's the catch? If you have to ask, this shows why inflation tends to happen once a generation. It's been about a generation since the last round in the late 1970s. Now, I remember that when home interest rates, you know, to buy a home, mortgage rates were running 12, 13, 14, 15%. They had to do away with the usury laws that made it illegal for credit card companies to charge more than 10% interest. Because they were, you know, they went up to 15, 18, 20%. Anyway, he says, it's been a generation since the last round of the 1970s, and many people have forgotten or never knew what it was like. But inflation just wreaks absolute havoc on a nation, particularly on those who live on fixed incomes. It's one of the reasons why Social Security now is not worth what it was worth when it was started. It's one of the reasons why people earning the minimum wage now are in abject poverty, whereas when the minimum wage was first established, it was actually close to a living wage. If you were to take the minimum wage from the 1960s and adjust it for inflation, right now it would be over $8. But instead it's, what, $5.15, I think, or $5.50? So anyhow, he says, Bush has put Greenspan in a terrible bind by heedlessly running up the deficit. He has goosed the economy in the short term by chipping away at the tax base. He's made it harder to restore fiscal responsibility. There's a drunk at the wheel, and all Greenspan's got is the brake. What a tough one. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program. Tom Hartmann here with you 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartmann.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartmann will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartmann in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new.
And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with three current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush re-election campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A uniter, not a divider. I really would like to see a United States of America. I'd really like to see, as John Edwards says, one America. It's just amazing to me that people didn't get this back, you know, a couple of years ago when George Bush started first advocating for tax cuts that would increase the debt and the deficit, saying that they were going to create jobs. Now, yes, according to the Labor Department, we have created something like 1.5 million jobs. They actually have only counted about 35,000 of those. The rest are done based on what they call the birth-death model, because they say new companies, when they start up, you don't know that they're there. So they look at the number of companies that die and assume that for every company that dies, there must be one being born. And so that's where the majority of those jobs have come from. It's one of the reasons why last month, the April and May figures, they had to revise downward by 35,000 because even that model didn't work. But anyhow, George Bush came along and said,
with a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
And I was surprised that nobody just did the math on that. You divide $550 billion by 1 million, and you get that we're paying $550,000 for every new job that we're creating. That first of all, just didn't seem to me like such a good deal. But you know, apparently it's, you know, Bushonomics. It works very well. The solution here is really very straightforward. It's number one, we stop borrowing from our children and our grandchildren in order to have a good time so our politicians can grease the palms of their buddies and that, I mean, you talk about vote buying, and so that they can claim that they've helped the economy when, in fact, they're running a train over the edge of a bridge. Number one, we stop borrowing from our children and start paying our way. Start paying our way. Let's either raise taxes or cut spending. And if you're going to cut spending, let's be honest with the American people and tell them, sorry, forget about health care, forget about Social Security, forget about public education, forget about clean air and clean water. Now we're going to let the corporations handle all of that. All right, the conservative agenda. Why not just be honest about it? If that's instead of putting it all in jargon and doublespeak. It's Tom Hartman with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
I did something for the worst possible reason, admitted the president. Just because I could. That was Bill Clinton doing his recent mea culpa about his Oval Office tryst with Monica Lewinsky. To his belated credit, Clinton admits shame about this abuse of power. I think that's just about the most morally indefensible reason anybody could have for doing anything. Now, let's fast forward to George W. To his credit, W. would not think of having sex with a White House intern. But this does not make him an innocent in the abuse of presidential power. What we now learn from the 9/11 Commission and recent books by White House insiders is that George launched a war for the worst possible reason, because he could. It's clear that there was no geopolitical necessity for his attack on Iraq, no threat to our national security, no weapons of mass destruction or ties to Al-Qaeda, no reason to send American men and women to die, except for the worst reason, because he could. He and his gang of neocon chicken hawks had an ideological score to settle with Saddam Hussein, and they were out to do it regardless of rationality, right, or consequences. Here's a Bush quote from a talk he gave to the National Security Council. I do not need to explain why I say things. That's the interesting thing about being the president. Maybe somebody needs to explain to me why they say something, but I don't feel like I owe anybody an explanation. He has the power. Mike makes right. He can cause death, gruesome injuries, vast destruction, horror, and increased danger to America just because he can, which is the most morally indefensible reason anybody could have for doing anything. This is Jim Hightower saying, Clinton abused his presidential power to work out his sexual fantasies with an intern. That's pathetic. Bush, however, has abused his power to work out his Saddam fantasies with other people's lives. That's beyond contempt.
LendingTree.com presents How to Get Out from Under Debt. First, take an average guy.
Hello.
Then add some credit card debt, a car payment, and a student loan.
Ow.
To get out from under all this debt, get a debt consolidation loan from LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 7 minutes past the hour. The quote for the day from John McCain. He says, you can't fly in on an aircraft carrier and declare victory and have the deaths continue. You can't do that. Yeah, John McCain's a big supporter of George W. Yes, indeed. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Janet Reitman is a reporter for Rolling Stone magazine. She's been in Iraq reporting on the Iraq war there, and I'm very pleased to have her on the program today. Hey, Janet, welcome to the Tom Hartmann program.
Thanks.
Tell us about, first of all, there are a few items here, isolation, politics, censorship. What's it like being over there? I'm assuming you've been reading Doonesbury the last couple of days.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Wasn't it Wolfowitz who first said, the press corps are a bunch of cowards because they're just hiding out, and then somebody pointed out to him that 30 journalists have been killed in Iraq, and he had to, sort of slink away, as Wolfie is good at doing. And what's it really like over there?
I know, it's just funny because the Wolfowitz statement kind of worried me, because I thought, my God, maybe he read my article and somehow misinterpreted it, because it's certainly journalists are trying very hard to go out and report as much as they can. It's just really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also a really fluid kind of situation. So, like, I was there in April and May, and at that point it was really very dangerous. This is sort of right after the kidnappings, the sort of height of the kidnapping period. So it was really, really, really dangerous to leave Baghdad. As a result, many, many reporters didn't leave Baghdad, and they basically were in their hotels a lot of the time. And they would go. You wind up going to press conferences sort of across town into the what they call the green zone, which is now called the international zone. It's this area where the U.S. Embassy is and where the CPA had been.
Isn't that the old area that Saddam had basically kind of walled off, this kind of wealthy area, wealthy community?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was Saddam. It's a home, Saddam's Republican Palace is there, and a lot of the sort of big monuments, and the National Zoo is there. There's a lot of, it's beautiful. I mean, there's a beautiful area, and there's parkland and lots of trees. And so reporters would go there on a daily basis, and that would be, at times it would be like their one outing of the day.
Yeah.
And many would go in highly protected vehicles and in armored vehicles, and some would have to wear flak jackets because their companies sort of demanded this. I know that a lot of news organizations, not ours, but mostly TV organizations, require that their reporters never travel without their flak jackets. It's like an insurance issue.
Well, yeah. In fact, could you get? I mean, I've been in a couple of war zones, and I've never been able to actually get life insurance when I go into a war zone doing international relief work. Were you able to get to be insured? I mean,
Lloyd's of London. Lloyd's of London is the one. Sort of outfit internationally.
Therefore,
that will ensure you do life insurance and also medical, like evacuation insurance for people going into war zones.
Yeah.
It's really expensive. But
we never went that far. I mean, we called our local insurance agent, and he said, no, sorry, can't do it. I'm going anyway.
It's really very tough. I mean, yeah. I think there's a lot of paranoia in Baghdad, and from what I hear from the people that are there now, it's sort of quieted down to some degree. It doesn't feel quite as dangerous as it did, but I think they're in a period of waiting to see what happens, and, there's no sense that this is, a permanent situation. I think everybody thinks this is kind of a temporary lull and something bad will happen again in another couple of weeks.
Yeah. So that's the situation. That's sort of the feel of life there, and it's got to be a difficult one to report on. What about, in the White House press briefings, there's the daily press briefings, and then there's also the occasional, the rare press conference. I mean, George W. Bush has done fewer televised press conferences than any president since the invention of television. No, seriously. But, traditionally, Helen Thomas, the grand dame of American journalism, she had been covering presidents since Harry Truman. And she's in her 80s now, and she was always seated in the front row. And she, Eisenhower, I guess, started this thing. He liked her. In one of the first two or three months of the Bush administration, Bush had one of his very rare press conferences, and she got up and asked a question that he didn't like, and boom, she got moved to the back, and she hasn't been called on since at all. Is there, and that can be a career killer. You know, I mean, yeah. You wonder why people like John King seem to be sucking up to George W. or why, you know, why the network, White House correspondents, you know, seem to be on the side of the White House. Well, it's because they've got a good job that's paying. I mean, some of these guys, men and women who are working for the big networks, I mean, they're making, you know, a couple hundred thousand bucks a year. And if the White House decides that they're never going to take questions from this person because they asked an impertinent question, they're going to lose their jobs.
Well, the New York Times has never interviewed George Bush. And there was a really good article in the New Yorker about this very issue, about this whole issue of access in the White House press corps.
Well, I'm wondering if that same thing is happening in Baghdad, in Iraq. Is there something like that going on where if you're viewed as a hostile reporter, you don't get on the bus, as it were?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, I think that certainly those who feel that their newspapers sort of, for example, or more left wing, like, you know, the British paper, The Guardian, is a very sort of an openly left newspaper, and
right.
the correspondent for The Guardian is constantly complaining that he doesn't get called on in press briefings, and, you know, he was not invited when there was a trip to Abu Ghraib prison right after this Abu Ghraib scandal broke.
Mm-hmm.
They invited a sort of select group of media, mostly the big networks, the big newspapers.
And faux news.
For some reason, they left out the news magazines. They left out the Wall Street Journal. I mean, I think they just sort of tried to hit the, you know, the sort of organizations with the biggest daily circulations or the biggest daily audiences. But they, when it came to the foreign media, they absolutely left out any newspaper or, I guess they included the BBC, but it was the newspapers. They left out all the newspapers that had any kind of sense of a liberal leaning.
Yeah.
And you'll find a lot of those journalists that feel that they don't get called on enough. I mean, this is also, I was there when there was the CPA. The CPA is not there now. So there's a new guy that's briefing. I have no idea. You know, under the State Department, it's probably a somewhat different environment. I'm assuming that the State Department is going to be a little bit more ecumenical about it.
Yeah.
The military was actually really, they're very open-minded. I mean, the military is a really easy organization to work with, believe it or not. They're very, very interested in you know, trying to accommodate journalists and trying to be open with journalists. And so you actually wind up getting much more information from the military.
Yeah, the military traditionally is nonpartisan. I mean, they're separate from
there's
politics.
In
fact, they're proud of the fact that they're separate from politics.
You know,
as
I mean,
much as the Republicans
the
are trying to claim them, you know, it's not real.
Yeah, no, the military briefer that was there when I was there, and I think he's still there, is this guy, General Mark Kimmett. And, you know, this guy he's not even, you know, he's not a spokesman by, you know, he's an operational guy. He's a paratrooper. And somehow he got this job as spokesman, and he actually hates his job, from what I gather. And, you know, does the best he can, but he really doesn't have an agenda. But I think that the problem with the CPA is it did have an agenda. There were a lot of people that were political appointees. You know, they weren't necessarily specialists in the Arab world at all,
mm-hmm.
and they were you know, former Hill staffers, mostly Republicans, and they had an agenda, and they were very much following that agenda.
Now,
I think a lot of journalists felt that.
At the same time, though, Janet Reitman, by the way, for those of you who just tuned in, Janet Reitman reports in the Iraq War for Rolling Stone magazine. Janet, is there a website or anything that you'd like to plug, you know, that or refer people to where they can find your writings or more information about you?
Well, you can read my story on Rolling Stone on the Rolling Stone website if you go to rollingstone.com and then you click on politics.
Great.
It should link it to the article. It's called The Baghdad Follies, and it should be up for at least another week or so.
Super.
And it's difficult, and it's really difficult to find most of my stuff online because a lot of the magazines. Well, I write for Rolling Stone pretty exclusively. And they're just not
stuff
comes
and goes.
They're not always available, and you have to, you know, can't even get them on Nexus. So.
Yeah.
But
that's life. Yeah. On my website, I write a lot for Common Dreams, and you know, so I just created an archive on my website. But
I should do a website.
Yeah.
I just haven't done that yet.
Anyhow,
next project.
Yeah. Now you say, you know, the military isn't that much of a problem. Didn't you have to sign a 7-page?
If you want to get embedded, I mean, my experience there was also, I'm going back to Baghdad in a couple of weeks, and this is going to be a different experience. But when I was there the last time, I was reporting on the press.
Right.
So I didn't, you know, try to get embedded. I didn't try to cover the war the way most of the reporters there were trying to cover the war.
Well, that's interesting. You went as a reporter to report on the reporters who were reporting on the war.
Right. So I wound up actually going and reporting on, say, Fallujah, because I was with you know, Josh Hammer from Newsweek, you know, who was going to Fallujah to do a story.
Right.
But I, myself, under normal circumstances, you know, I would go and embed with the military or try to be reporting the war from the ground and that kind of thing. And this was just an unusual situation where I wasn't in that situation. But nevertheless, every single journalist that arrives in Baghdad and needs to get a press credential in order to go to these briefings has to basically sign a 7-page waiver, you know, which is, you know, a list of military rules. And a lot of them are pretty straightforward, but there are certain things in there that are sort of bizarre. And
for example?
For example, you're not allowed, well, we thought it was really funny, you weren't allowed to take photographs of detainees for fear of embarrassing them.
But see, that's a violation of the Geneva Convention. The Geneva Convention says that you can't embarrass a prisoner of war. I'm serious. I mean, a lot of people said
it's highly ironic if it happened.
Yeah, a lot of people said that the way that this administration was dealing with Saddam Hussein, you know, showing the pictures of him being inspected for lice, was a violation of the Geneva Conventions.
Right.
Now, you noted that a lot of American reporters go out of their way to tell local Iraqis that they're actually Canadians or French?
Yeah. You don't go out of your way, but you never, if somebody asks you what nationality you are, you never say you're American, even to your own drivers half the time. You have to know your driver really well before you tell him you're an American.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Because the risk is that you'll be killed, you'll be kidnapped,
yeah.
You'll be...
You know, I mean, most drivers, obviously, if you're working for an American news organization, they'll know. I think a lot of freelancers, freelance photographers, and freelance writers who, you know, work for, say, Salon. I know a guy that works for Salon. He's a freelancer, and he tells everyone he's Irish.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be an American to work for Salon.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what he does. And there's just this fear that if there was such heavy, heavy, heavy anti-American sentiment that you just don't admit to it. I mean, if you want to kidnap somebody, kidnapping an American is basically
otherwise
the highest prize.
Yeah, otherwise Lloyds of London is going to have to pay off, you know. Yeah. Okay, we're talking with Janet Reitman, a writer for Rolling Stone magazine. Her article you can find at rollingstone.com. Janet, we've only got about 30 seconds left here. I'm wondering what you think is going to be the future of Iraq. What's your sense of what's going on there?
You know what, I have no idea. I know some people that believe there's going to be a civil war there. I think a lot of people hope that somehow this government's going to work. I mean, I don't think you can expect democracy to happen in a year.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a long road. And I hope that, you know, they sort of have the fortitude to last, you know, it out. But I think it's impossible to predict.
Yeah.
Impossible.
No doubt. Janet, thank you very much for being with us. Janet Reitman, writer for the Rolling Stone magazine, rollingstone.com. You can find her article, click on politics. And it's right there, 20 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right, We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
Lancers, bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say an army of one?
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And to everything, there's a season. Speaking of the interesting coincidences, the turns of time, in our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and clicking on the chat link, in our chat room, Jay Kevin says, with the exclusion of John Tyler, all of the Johns who have become president of the United States came from Massachusetts. This is fascinating. John Adams, John Quincy Adams, and John Kennedy. Interesting. Every now and then, you know, you just get these little kind of coincidence things that are just too strange. I remember when Reagan was first... when he was making nice, as it were, with Gorbachev, and there were some people on the extreme right who were just absolutely flipped out about that a president of the United States would be establishing a friendship with the leader of the Soviet Union. And they were pointing out that Gorbachev has a birthmark on his forehead that looks like a horn, and that Ronald Wilson Reagan, if you count the letters in Ronald, it's six letters. If you count the letters in Wilson, it's six letters. If you count the letters in Reagan, it's six letters. And that in Revelation, it says that the 666 is going to enter into a partnership with the whore of Babylon, who has the mark of the beast, of the horn, on her forehead. You know, they were all historical. But anyhow, every now and then you just get these weird coincidences and strange things. But I don't know how I got off on that. Sorry about that. Anyhow, I was talking with Janet just after I got off the phone, and she said, this is really where the rubber hits the road with this whole thing. She said it was nice doing an interview with somebody who wasn't hostile. She said she was on Fox News over the weekend, and it was brutal. And I thought that was really interesting. Here's a reporter who is coming along saying, "I'm going to tell you about the quality of the news you're getting." Right, the story that she did for Rolling Stone was essentially about the reporting that was being done in Iraq, and the fact, you know, that it was being filtered, that it was being censored, that reporters in many cases were finding it very difficult to get out and actually find out what was going on the ground, that the military had these 7 pages you had to sign, there were all this stuff. And Fox News thought that was bad, right? How dare you expose the reality of reporting? Similarly, this article today, Washington, the Associated Press, by Ted Brightus, AP writer, a federal judge threw out a lawsuit yesterday, by a whistleblower who alleged security lapses in the FBI's translator program. This is the story of Sybil Edmonds. Now, you've heard me mention Sybil Edmonds before. Sybil Edmonds is a woman who speaks, who was raised in part in Iran, and speaks Farsi and speaks English and speaks one other language. She doesn't speak Arabic, oddly enough, but she speaks one third language. I don't recall what it was right off the, you know, one of the Middle Eastern languages. And Farsi, of course, is what they speak in Iran. And she was hired by the FBI after 9/11 to go through a bunch of translations that had been done by other people of things in the languages that she spoke. And she discovered, or so the story goes, see, this has all been retroactively censored by John Ashcroft, retroactively, after she gave open testimony to Congress, retroactively classified top secret, she apparently discovered that there were references to essentially what became 9/11, to buildings and to hijackings and all this kind of stuff. And the FBI was embarrassed by this and fired her. Or that's how it appears. And she's trying to sue to you know, to get her job back, get her good name back, whatever. And this judge, who was appointed by George W. Bush, U.S. District Judge Reggie B. Walton, says, nope, sorry, you can't sue Sybil Edmonds. You can't sue the FBI. We're not going to let you do it. And she says, he says it'll expose national security secrets, right? In other words, it'll embarrass the FBI. She says, this shows how the separation of power has basically disappeared. The judge ruled in this case without ever actually this being a case. In other words, he never even got into the merits of it. Amazing. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum, a public citizen, outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down 4 of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with 3 current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Here's the question for the day. Do you want Reverend Moon teaching your kids about religion and sex? Because he may well be. He may well be right now. You know, the mystery continues, by the way. Who was the senator who pulled together the huge Senate meeting room so that Reverend Moon could have his reception where Representative Danny Davis of Illinois and another congressman brought crowns to Reverend Moon and his wife, and Reverend Moon declared himself the Messiah this recently. The mystery continues. Still, no senator has come out and said, yes, I booked that room. It requires the signature of a senator to happen. But apparently this is not something that the press is really digging into. And I find it fascinating how little attention the press has paid to all of this. Louis Farrakhan makes an anti-Semitic remark, and it is headlines. And Louis Farrakhan has relatively little power in the United States. Reverend Moon, who owns United Press International and the Washington Times, and has incredible power inside this administration, says, through the principle of indemnity, Hitler killed 6 million Jews. In other words, it was payback for the Jews rejecting Christ. And it hardly gets reported. And now it gets even stranger. The last December, Reverend Moon, this John Gorenfeld did a great piece about this in Salon, by Salon.com. You can find it. It's called "Bad Moon on the Rise," and is remarkable. And James Towey, who is George Bush's director of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives, last December, gave the opening remarks when Reverend Moon spoke to his faithful. Of course, Senator Richard Lugar was there, the Republican of Indiana, Representative Danny Davis, a Democrat of Illinois, and others. But the director of the White House Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives there and made the opening remarks. Moon came on then and called for all the religions of the world to come together in support, says Gorenfeld, of the Bush plan for faith-based initiatives. Now, of course, Moon thinks all the religions of the world should come together because he intends to lead them all. He has already said, quote, the separation between religion and politics, the separation between religion and politics is what Satan likes the most. This, a convicted felon, a weapons manufacturer, multimillionaire. He's going to clean up the gays, he says. He calls them dung-eating dogs. He's going to take care of American women. He calls American women a line of prostitutes. And says the Jews have to repent. And how is all this going to happen? Well, when the world begins to adopt appropriate sexual practices, which brings us, oddly enough, to George Bush and this administration. And the Office of Faith-Based Initiatives and the anti-AIDS program that Bush was bragging about on TV the other day, that he says, well, we put forth $15 billion. Actually, they funded less than a billion of it. And now we find a third of that money has to go to programs that preach abstinence. Doesn't matter if there's people dying. Well, you know, abstinence is fine. I'm all in favor of it. I'm the parent of three children. We preached abstinence. But it's not, number one, it's not the whole thing. And number two, it turns out now we discover they're giving Reverend Moon your and my taxpayer dollars to teach our kids sex education. And wait till you hear what he's teaching them. 1-866-889-8894, by the way, is our telephone number if you'd like to opine on the topics of the day. And, in fact, let's go to the lines for just a moment here. And Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
You know, Tom, it's a fascinating thing, this whole business with Moon. About 25 years ago, I was listening to a lecture from a Buddhist master from Tibet, and somebody said something about Moon, and he said, well, you know, and of course this again is 25 years ago, he says, most of this guy's followers are ex-drug addicts and prostitutes and what have you, and at the end of the day, he's probably helping them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go from that, fast forward to now, I think we get an adage of power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. One always wonders about the intent of people like that, or like maybe even like Bush at the beginning, or any of these other guys. And you wonder when they start to get power, maybe they just lose it at that point. It's a long, slippery slope, you know?
Well, I suspect with Moon it started out that way. I mean, you know, the guy started out as a businessman. He declared himself the Messiah long ago. I have a good friend who is actually fairly high up in the Krishna organization. And Louise and I, he lives in one of the Hare Krishna communities near Baltimore. And Louise and I have visited him outside near Washington. Actually, they're closer to Washington, D.C. And, you know, we've spent a weekend there and, you know, sang and danced and ate their good food. And I mean, you know, it's a cult. And he's not unabashed about that. Hey, you know, we've decided to separate ourselves from the world, just like monks do, just like nuns do in the Catholic Church, and practice our religion. But they're not trying to corrupt our government, and they're not taking money from our government. And,
I absolutely agree. I guess
I've got no problem, you know, with the Krishnas or the Catholics, you know, or anybody, you know, who wants to go off and say, you know, I'm going to go off the religious deep end and give my life to this. But you were saying, Mike.
Anyway, I guess my point was is that it just seems fascinating that the more you look into it, you know, it's like you look at like Hitler was a Viennese painter. What caused him to go off the deep end? I mean, do you believe that he got seduced somehow, or was he born evil? One always wonders about that sort of thing, and I just think it's one of the reasons it's so important for America to appreciate and maintain the separation of powers, because I don't think any one person can handle the kind of power that they're trying to create in the executive branch right now.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And in answer to your presumably rhetorical question about Hitler, he was seduced, and it was by religion. He was taken into the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E, the Thule Society, which had very bizarre initiation rituals, which involved human skulls and bones, among other things. And he saw this as the beginning of a new Christianity. It was they had invented a religion that basically the SS were the, you know, the high priests of, and they'd taken over this castle in Wavelsburg in Germany, about 100 miles north of Frankfurt. They were building a new Vatican. It was going to be twice the size of the Vatican. It was going to be shaped like the head of a spear, the spear of Longinus, you know, who pierced the side of Christ. They took over the city. The city is still now all ancestors of SS people. I've been there. We actually, a friend of mine, Scott Berg, and I were going to write a book on the religion of the Nazis, and we spent about a year researching this. And the Nazi cemetery there, of the SS cemetery, is perfectly manicured, flowers on all the graves every day. There's still houses with skulls mounted around them and runic writing. I mean, it's very strange, Wavelsburg. And we walked into this into this guest house that was not well identified. But I spoke enough German to realize that that's what it was. We walked in, and there was about 50 old men sitting around a long table with black candles running down the middle of it, and these wreaths around the top with black candles burning on them, engaged in some sort of bizarre ritual. You know, it's like they're still out there. There really was and still is this religion, and that's Hitler was seduced by it. So, in answer to your question.
Thank you very much. Actually, it was a rhetorical question, but thanks for the lesson.
Yeah, well, the reason that we didn't finish the book was because a book called Hitler, Black Magician was published about the time that we were wrapping up our research, and this guy had nailed, I forget the name of the author right now, but he had nailed down probably 80-90% of what we had, and we felt at that point, okay, this is it. So if you're curious, Hitler, Black Magician is a brilliant book about the religion of the Nazis and the seduction of all those guys. Anyhow, Chuck, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. So here we have now Reverend Moon. He received one of his groups. It's called Free Teens USA. Of course, Free Teens USA, like most Mooney groups, pretends it's not a Mooney group. Now, we have no official ties to the Unification Church, but as John Gorenfeld points out in his article in Salon, they did a Freedom of Information Act filing, and they discovered that the director and chief finance officer of the Free Teens USA Club, as well as others listed on the group's board of directors, are former or present high-ranking Unification Church officials who omitted those leadership roles from their applications for the federal grant. Interesting. And they received $475,280 to create, in New Jersey's public school systems, after-school celibacy clubs. The instructions that Reverend Moon gives are, number one, no sex before marriage. Number two, after marriage, the first two nights, first of all, whenever you have sex, you must do it with a photograph of Reverend Moon positioned so that he can watch over you. And secondly, the first two nights, the woman should be on top. And then on the third night, you reverse, and the man is on top, and henceforth and forevermore, because that's restoring dominion over Eve. Then, to quote John Gorenfeld's article, then, according to the instructions attributed to the UC's Unification Church's American Blessed Family Department, quote, after the act of love, both spouses should wipe their sexual areas with a holy handkerchief, which refers to a church-supplied washcloth, which must be kept individually labeled and should never be laundered or mixed up, end quote. This is really weird stuff. This is, keep in mind, this is the guy who owns UPI, he owns the Washington Times, he owns Tiempos del Mundo in South America. His Washington Times Foundation gave $1 million to the George H.W. Bush Presidential Library. He's paid hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions, nobody knows, to the former president in speaking fees. John Ashcroft has attended Mooney events, among others. It's in December of last year, Bush, George W. Bush, appointed David Caprara, a top official for Moon in Washington, to head the War on Poverty program of AmeriCorps Vista. Caprara had been director of Moon's American Family Coalition and was one of the Unification Church's top political operatives, says John Gorenfeld. in the Salon.com article, Bad Moon on the Rise. You know, do you want Reverend Moon or any religious official teaching your kids about anything, really, with your tax dollars? Because it's happening right now. Caprara, who is this head Mooney guy, who was appointed head of the War on Poverty program by George W. Bush, founded a pro-faith-based policy group called the Empowerment Network, which claimed Senators Rick Santorum and Joe Lieberman as leaders. Although Salon.com notes they just recently, apparently right after the story broke, took their name off the website. In 1996, Gorenfeld points out, Moon praised communism for producing obedient followers trained under totalitarianism who are trained to follow once an order came from above, unlike wayward Americans. In 1987, in a speech, Moon pointed out, individualism is what God hates most. He played a key role in the Iran-Contra affair. The Washington Times created a fund that contributed the first $100,000 to Ollie North's Nicaraguan Freedom Fund. In 1995, you may recall, Jerry Falwell was in trouble financially. He desperately needed $3.5 million because Liberty University was going down the tubes. Reverend Moon loaned it to him. Or perhaps gave it to him. I mean, you know, who knows now? George Bush Sr. has spoken to a number of Mooney groups around the country. In fact, he told the Post through a spokesman, quote, this group is about strengthening the family, and that's what President and Mrs. Bush are deeply focused on. He's now... Got a little more for you on this. Let's take a call from Harry in Ann Arbor, 1-866-889-8894. Harry, your thoughts?
Hello?
You're live and on the air, Harry.
Oh, thanks. You talking about Reverend Moon?
I am.
I thought he had to skip the country on about taxes back in the 50s or so.
Yeah, I was back in the 70s, as I recall, and he actually came back and went to jail for tax evasion. He did go to jail. I think he spent a year and a half in jail. He's an ex-con.
Okay, I remember back in the 50s, the Moonies were all dressed, well-dressed people at the airport. They were all begging for funds for the Moonies.
Yeah, usually my experience of the Moonies was that usually they pretended to be some. Usually they pretended to be something other than Moonies. I remember one time we were in a supermarket, and there was this young woman sitting in a wheelchair, selling flowers, and with a little bit of conversation, we discovered A, she didn't need the wheelchair, and B, she was a Moonie. But that wasn't the official line, you know, that she was giving out. Harry, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. 10 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with three current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush re-election campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
When the night has come and the land is dark
and the moon comes out. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Four minutes before the hour, four and a half, thereabouts. And Reverend Moon, you know, apparently George W. Bush is not the only one who thinks that these are the end days and the last moments are right here. Reverend Moon believes that he's about to be crowned as the Messiah by the entire world. And to advance that, they're holding crucifix burying ceremonies. He sees the cross as the last obstacle to people realizing that he's actually the Messiah, not Jesus. And so they're holding conferences around the country with banners reading, "Tear down the walls, who is Reverend Moon?" culminating in a final crucifix burying ceremony. And these are the people who are taking our tax dollars, apparently, you know, according to this article on Salon.com, to teach our kids sex education. Remarkable. This is why Thomas Jefferson wrote a letter to Benjamin Rush, a good friend of his, who was a physician and a Christian. And Jefferson says, "Dear sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity which I have not forgotten." He said, I do not know that it would reconcile the genus irritable vatum, that is, the angry prophets, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting a ground to be softened. The delusion on the clause of the Constitution," he's talking about the First Amendment, "which, while it secured the freedom of press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to the clergy a very favorable hope of establishing, of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity through the United States, and every sect believes its own form to be the true one. Everyone, perhaps, hopes for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and Congregationalists." He continues, "The returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes. And they," the preachers, "believe that any portion of power confided in me," this was such as his being elected president, he wrote this 3 months before he was elected president, 1800, "will be exerted in opposition to their schemes." In other words, the preachers are worried that if he's elected, he's not going to go along with them. He says, "And they believe rightly, for I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." There's that famous quote. Did you know it was in the context of saying that he's going to keep the preachers out of government? And he says, and then he goes on to say, "But this is all they have to fear from me, but it's enough, in their opinion." It's time for a return to the separation of church and state, my friends. It's just getting too weird with these cons in office. It's just getting altogether too strange, as Trish says in our chat room. Seriously psychologically weird, right? I think that's the phrase. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
it intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 9-1-1, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they publish the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shriek the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation. It gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast. Today, the 7th of July, 118 days to regime change. 134 days since 9/11, 691 days since the anthrax killer struck, virtually guaranteeing the passage of the Patriot Act, taking out the offices of Senator Patrick Leahy, the Democrat who was the head of the Senate Intelligence, the Senate Judiciary Committee, that was going to have to release the bill, and the office of Senator Tom Daschle, the head of the Senate Democrats. Of course, the Democrats at that point ran the Senate because Jim Jeffords had changed parties. Interesting how the anthrax killer only targeted them. 608 days since we began the search for weapons of mass destruction and 395 days since Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, was outed by a traitor in the White House. According to, using the language of George H.W. Bush, a traitor in the White House. Of course, his son had a slightly different idea about, the White House senior administration official who committed treason, who shut down, not only outed Joe Wilson's wife, but shut down an entire CIA operation. They had set up a phony corporation. They had offices all over the world. They were offering to sell weapons of mass destruction to terrorists. They had a bunch of them on the line. CIA agents all over the world had to be pulled in because Valerie Plame's identity got outed. And what did George W. say about that?
Well, and I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration. And there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No. Yeah. Well, it's time for a piggy alert, a conservative alert.
Have you seen bigger piggies in the starched white shirts?
The bigger piggies in their starched white shirts, under the guise of preventing forest fires, the Bush administration is planning the biggest timber sale on public lands in modern history. The Biscuit Project would allow logging of 372 million board feet of timber in Oregon's Siskiyou National Forest, enough timber to fill 70,000 logging trucks. The logging would be done on wild lands of uncommon beauty and ecological diversity, far from any community that could be damaged by fire. Steve Holmer, communications director of the United Forest Defense Campaign, says it's the biggest logging sale since World War II. Timber companies have made huge contributions to the Bush campaign. This project is political payback. Well, could be. The U.S. Forest Service initially proposed a much smaller project. This was an area that had been burned, and they said, let's clear some of that out. Although, there are many who suggest, actually, that generally it's considered best to just kind of let nature take its course. Carbon stays there. Stuff gets recycled. But anyhow, once the Forest Service initially proposed a smaller project, maybe 100 million board feet sale, this being 372 million, that changed once Mark Rae, a top lobbyist for the timber industry, was appointed by George W. Bush to be the administration's undersecretary for natural resources and environment in the Department of Agriculture. He went to work on the sale, and suddenly, boom, In addition to being one of the biggest public lands logging sales in history, the Biscuit Logging Project may be one of the most expensive to taxpayers, ultimately costing you and me, not the logging companies, you and me, $34 million. Why? Well, the Forest Service has to build roads. If they're going to log with helicopters, we've got to create pads, two-acre clear cuts. The timber industry gets a huge windfall. You know, it's the way that you do it. Internalize profits, externalize costs. And externalize, a fancy way for saying stick it to the taxpayers. Under the Clinton administration, Holmer says, the Siskiyou was almost made a national monument. It's an area of unparalleled biological diversity, home to rare species that exist only in this region, clean water for salmon, and very important to the local tourism and recreation industry. And now it's going to be toast.
Have you seen Pinkett's piggies in the starched white shed?
Yes, our piggy alert for the day, our conservative alert. Along those same lines, interesting little bit of information here. The tip of the day, as it were. Maybe you've heard this on the news, maybe not. I'm sure you won't hear it on faux news. Everybody on the right, all the cons are criticizing John Edwards for being a trial lawyer, for being somebody who is willing to stand up on behalf of the little guy and take on big corporations. This is a terrible thing in their worldview. It's absolutely terrible, unconscionable. We would never do this. We would never sue a company. Are you kidding? Even if we were harmed, no, we would never do that. No, we need to put a stop to this. However, in 1999, George W. Bush sued Enterprise Rent-A-Car for a minor fender bender involving one of his daughters. No one was hurt, and the insurance covered all costs. But Bush sued anyway, seeking additional money from Enterprise for renting a car to someone with a suspended license. Not his daughter, but the driver of the other car involved in the accident. So in this case, you know, Bush seemed to understand that the reason you have civil lawsuits like this is to deter people from doing wrong. It's to say to corporations, hey, if you're going to do things that you're not supposed to do that are against the law, there's going to be a cost to that. You're going to have to pay for it. And, in fact, Enterprise Rent-A-Car did pay. They settled out of court, as usually these cases are done, in W's favor. He won the lawsuit. He hired a trial lawyer. And along that, you know, continuing down that same road here now, our mislead of the day, this is from the Daily Misleader. Misleader.org is the website. Bush and Cheney mislead on tort reform. See, tort is the fancy legal term for you sue somebody, you sue a corporation, right? You sue somebody for damage. President Bush and Vice President Cheney continue to dishonestly claim that trial lawyers are to blame for skyrocketing health care costs. And it's not just Bush and Cheney, by the way, who are saying it's right across the board on the right. You say, but wait a minute, aren't they? I thought that, you know, people had to, you know, drive 100 miles to find a doctor because all the doctors had been put out of business because of lawsuits. Well, you know, the reality is that there are some bad doctors out there who have been sued a lot. But anyhow, let's get back to reality here. President Bush said Friday that, quote, Frivolous lawsuits run up the cost of medicine, and that solutions to health care problems were stopped in Congress, quote, because the trial lawyers are powerful in the Senate, end quote. Similarly, Cheney said last week that, quote, medical liability reform is the key to control the cost of health care. If we could just get rid of those terrible trial lawyers, the cost of health care would stop skyrocketing. It's gone up 44% in the 3 years of the Bush administration. But according to undisputed government and academic data, lawsuits have little, if anything, to do with health care costs. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, costs from malpractice lawsuits represent less than 2% of the nation's total health care spending, and the tort reform legislation pushed by Bush would reduce health insurance premiums by less than 0.5%. This is the Congressional Budget Office. This isn't some lefty group or some lawyer-sponsored group. This is the Congressional Budget Office, which right now is under the control of Republicans. While President Bush has claimed that lawsuits cause, quote, doctors to practice medicine in an expensive way in order to protect themselves in the courthouse, end quote, a study done by the Harvard University School of Public Health, another group not known as wild-eyed lefties, quote, did not find a strong relationship between the threat of litigation and medical costs, end quote. Additionally, a study in the Journal of Health Economics compared medical costs in states with limits on lawsuits to states without limits and found less than 0.3% difference in the cost of medical care in those two kinds of states. See, in some states, they've actually already made it difficult to sue a doctor who is, you know, who is harming you. Or either made it difficult to sue or put caps on. And it turns out it 0.3% is the total impact that that has. In all, the Congressional Budget Office reported, quote, there is no statistically significant difference in per capita health care spending between states with and without limits on malpractice torts. There you go. I mean, that's the real story, if you want the real story. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I want to get into this issue of waging war on Walmart. George Will wrote a very provocative piece in Newsweek this last week. And it deserves a little airing and a little rebuttal. And I'd like to talk about that. First, let's go to the phones, though. Brian in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just a quick comment or question. I really don't know how to refute these cons who say that Osama bin Laden and Saddam were tied. I mean, just yesterday, the September 11th panel comes out, and they say that, you know, the ties are weak. Tony Blair comes out yesterday, and he says that they're probably not going to find weapons of mass destruction. But when you say this to a con, they go, well, yeah, but Saddam was bad, and he was an oppressive regime. I mean, what can we say to these people we were told that they had weapons of mass destruction, and that's why we went there. And when you try to explain that to them, they kind of throw that away. I mean, how do you fight that argument?
Well, you know, I'm not really sure, Brian. There are some folks, you know, clearly who are just misinformed. I mean, we in the first hour of this program, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday of last week, we went through Frank Luntz's memo that he sent out to all the Republicans talking about whenever you give a speech about Iraq, be sure to start by talking about 9/11.
Right, I heard that.
And you know how and they're doing it. They're doing it. You know, and always figure out a way to weave 9/11 in the same paragraph with any discussion of Iraq, even though there's no connection between 9/11 and Iraq. This they've been doing this since right after 9/11, and that's why some at one point it was as high as 70% of Americans. Now it's down around 40%, although it's very high among people who watch Fox News. But by some 40% of Americans still think that there were Iraqis piloting those airplanes that hit the buildings, and there weren't. You know, it was Saudis and Sudanese. You know, it's a,
can this be viewed as any type of crime? I mean, is it you know, illegal in any way for them to do this?
No, it's
mass deception. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Say,
I mean,
you know?
Well, you know, Dick Cheney, Gloria Borger lied, and now the 9/11 panel today. I mean, it's in the paper today. They came out and they said, yes, we've seen the same information Cheney has, and he's wrong.
So, isn't lying treason?
No, it's not.
No.
You could say, however, that sending people off to war for a lie, that lying to the American people about something that's going to lead to the death of over 800 of our soldiers, not to mention tens of thousands of Iraqis, but, you know, 800 of our soldiers and the injury of over 16,000 of our soldiers, that is a high crime and misdemeanor worthy of impeachment. You could make that argument. And I think that if Bush gets elected this time around, that probably somebody will make that argument. Brian, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house,
Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartmann, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartmann Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
And welcome back. There it goes. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartmann here with you. Brian, the answer ultimately, I think the answer to your question, you know, how do you respond to cons who say, oh, you know, but Bill Clinton thought there were weapons of mass destruction, but he didn't take us to war. You know, he had inspectors in there, and he didn't take us to war. I'm sorry. But everybody in the world thought there were weapons of mass destruction, but everybody in the world didn't want to go to war. See, going to war is a real significant thing. I mean, when you have to explain to somebody that their child is dead because of a decision you made, it's important. And the rest of the world was saying, let's let the weapons inspectors figure this thing out. Everybody was saying that. Yeah, we may think there's weapons there. Maybe we don't. I mean, Hans Blix was quickly coming to the conclusion that there weren't. The earlier inspectors had come to the conclusion that there weren't. And Scott Ritter was pretty outspoken about it. In 98, 99, they had it down to about six buildings that they thought there might be something in. And so Clinton pulled them out and bombed those buildings. And they were pretty certain by that point, 99, 2000, that they had taken everything out. At least, for, you know, this is what Scott Ritter has said on this program. And he was the head of the weapons inspectors. So, you know, people say, well, blah, 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 blah. So I just say, I would just keep repeating the truth over and over again. Yes, maybe that's true. Maybe Clinton thought that. Maybe the rest of the world thought that. But they didn't take us to war over it. And if they were going to go to war, they would have brought the entire world. I mean, it would have been a collective thing, as it was in the Balkans. This is just, you know, this is, George W. has done it wrong. He's done it in a way that's harmed the United States. It's harmed our national security. It's harmed the so-called war on terror. It is... And it has cost the lives of 850, more or less, of our young men and women, and that is just wrong. Tony in Maryland, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Maryland's on the line. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm one of these Republicans that is switching parties.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of us out here.
Yeah, I'm getting a sense of that.
There are a lot. I have two questions for you. I've been really trying to get on the internet and really do a lot of research onto a lot of different things. And I'm familiar with, you know, what's going on with Reverend Moon, although you enlightened me on a couple of things because I hadn't actually read that article in Salon.
Yeah, in the last hour, about Reverend Moon getting tax money from the Bush administration. And,
well, I knew yeah. that, and I know a lot of different things. But when you were talking about the religious part of it, I'd known that. But you kind of put it in a way that made it a little bit clearer. And I have two questions. First of all, with this right-wing religious group that, you know, that Bush has aligned himself with, and then I know that, you know, the first President Bush has been talking for Moon and they've been involved. Two things. I was wondering how, if, and you don't even have to do it right now, if you, mm-hmm. maybe you could do it another time if you needed to. How does the Moon theory get involved with the other right wing, and are they supported, or, you know, how is that working as far as the other right wing, like the fundamentalists and so forth?
Yeah.
And then the other part that is really, really concerning me is I think it's called the Federalist Society.
Yes.
Where
stacking the courts.
Bush is getting a lot of his judges from,
yep.
and there are all these different judges that they're appointing to the judiciary.
Yeah, they just put one in yesterday. In fact, I've got that story to talk about today.
James Leon Holmes.
Yes. The guy who said that women don't get pregnant when they get raped, when in fact 50,000 women a year in the United States become pregnant as a result of rape.
Right, and the wife is subordinate, or, you know,
yeah.
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and Bush just pushed him through.
I was wondering if you could explain how this religious, and because these different, you know, right-wing religions, are they really integrated? Are they being supported by the Reverend Moon? And, you know, is this
yeah.
judiciary?
Well, let me, you know, good questions, Tony. Right after this break, let me...
I can take it off the air.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Sure, right after the break, I'll give you some, you know, my thoughts on those questions. They're good ones. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's Tom Hartman with you. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award, claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum, a public citizen, outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down four of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackout.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House, with three current and former top executives contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000. Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliant's contract, as both Enron and Arthur Anderson were barred from federal contracts when they were indicted.
Attempting to cut $40 million off of their budget, the Oregon Department of Human Services has begun cutting Oregonians living in poverty off of the state's standard health plan. If in the coming weeks enrollment in the plan doesn't shrink on its own, the department said it will begin removing people whose income is less than 50% of the federal poverty level. The plan must drop from its current 53,000 members to 25,000 by next June. And if the federal government blocks a proposed tax on hospitals, the rolls will have to be decreased by an additional 10,000. The standard version of the health plan was initially set up to cover working families who did not meet the requirements for traditional Medicaid coverage. However, a federal law requires the state to continue serving the 300,000 Medicaid-eligible people in the Health Plan Plus version. According to a report from the national nonprofit organization Families USA, more than 968,000 Oregonians have been uninsured over the past 2 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The latest figures from the Federal Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation say the number of underfunded pension plans dropped last year by 9%. About 1,050 pensions are collectively short some $279 billion, yet the report doesn't paint a complete picture. It only covers pension funds, which are $50 million or more in the red, and conveniently overlooks the massive underfunding that's taken place since 1999. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Propagandy, propagandy. If you want to fool the folks, it comes in handy. If you want to tell some lies, pull the wool over their eyes, you can do it with propagandy.
And welcome back, 26 minutes before the hour. Yeah, I thought it was interesting last night. Frank Luntz was on Chris Matthews' show and just presented as a pollster. Here's the pollster, and here's the guy who wrote the memo to the Republicans. It's this famous memo that Bill Moyers outed on Now last Friday night, saying we've got to create a psychological, I'm paraphrasing, you've got to create a psychological link in people's minds between 9/11 and Iraq, because we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction. There's no clear link between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, but we've got to make people think that there is. So that doesn't look like George W. is a liar, I guess. You know, it's just propaganda. Anyway, in answer to your question, Tony, and thank you so much for calling. In answer to your question, I find the whole phenomena fascinating. That Reverend Moon loaning Jerry Falwell $3.5 million to bail him out in 1995 when Liberty University was going under, and at the same time traveling around the United States and holding revivals where they bury a crucifix physically in the ground because Reverend Moon says that the cross is the final obstacle to people in America realizing that he's the true Messiah, and saying things like the Jews were killed in the Holocaust because they failed to accept Christ, and that he is the Messiah. And you know, I mean, statements that, I mean, if Louis Farrakhan made that statement, it would be all over the newspaper. But here's Reverend Moon, who owns the Washington Times, which is losing tens of millions of dollars, but is the official right-wing organ of the Republican Party and of the White House, and owns UPI, the United Press International, and owns a major news network down in South America. Here you have Reverend Moon saying these things, and they're just not being covered. They're just not being covered. And then you get a Mooney, George, and then George H.W. Bush. Reverend Moon gives him $1 million for his presidential library and pays him hundreds of thousands of dollars in speaking fees. George W. speaks well of him. John Ashcroft shows up for a Mooney event on, you know, very early on in his tenure as attorney general. And I just have to scratch my head. I think that what's going on, Tony, frankly, is that the average conservative Christian in the trenches, the average person who's, you know, going to church and you know, believing the doxology and you know, is right there, has no idea what's going on in Washington, D.C. Has no idea about the links between the Moon Organization and the fundamentalist power brokers. Because I don't think this has too much to do with religion, frankly. When Jerry Falwell, and Pat Robertson on TV made the remark that God allowed 9/11 to happen. He lifted the veil and allowed it to happen because the United States has condoned homosexuality. You know, in that moment, I got it. These guys are not really Christians. If being a Christian means following the teachings of Jesus Christ. And, you know, but they are into power, and Pat Robertson is a billionaire, and Jerry Falwell is a multimillionaire, and Reverend Moon is into power, and he's a multimillionaire, and I think that that's really where the connection goes, and I think the average person just doesn't know. I think they just don't know what's going on. Anyhow, let's go back to the phone here. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program. What's up?
Well, thank you, Tom. You know, I really do hope that Tony is correct and that there are a lot more people like her out there.
Yeah.
Switching over, or at least letting all of this come to light. Speaking of lies, I just wanted to mention, I was happy to hear today that the whole Medicare bill funding lie is coming back to bite the Bush administration on the butt, basically because they lied to their own party. They lied to many members of their own party to get that thing through, and I guess they just expected them just to roll over and let the lie wash away, but it's not working out that way. Congress is launching an investigation.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This was on ABC News about an hour and a half ago.
Ah.
That apparently one of the accounting generals or something said there were no laws broken, but Congress disagrees. So they're launching an investigation into the fact that the Bush administration knew beforehand it was going to cost
a
great deal more.
The whole thing with Tom Scully and Steve Foster.
Right.
I mean, that was really pretty amazing. What was amazing to me is that Tom Scully had been the president of the actual name of it, but essentially it was the Federation of For-Profit Hospitals in America. The bunch that Bill Frist became a millionaire by virtue of. Bill Frist and his family made their millions, tens of millions, perhaps even hundreds of millions, by buying up nonprofit, what had been formerly nonprofit hospitals, taking them private, jacking up the prices, squeezing blood out of people, probably literally, and getting rich. Right. And so Tom Scully was the head of the federation that represented these guys, and he was making good money. I mean, $750,000 a year in salary. And he quits his job and applies for a bureaucratic position in Washington, D.C. as head of Medicare, which can't pay over $100,000 a year, given civil service pay scales and all that. And George Bush personally lobbies for him. George W. Bush. And he gets this, and Tommy Thompson personally lobbies for him. He gets the job. He's the head of Medicare. He writes the Medicare law. He supervises the writing of it. He's got a guy working for him, Steve Foster, who says, but wait a minute, this is going to cost $500 million. And Scully says, no, you tell Congress it's only going to cost $300. It was $300 or $400. I forget which it was. And essentially orders his underling to lie. And then once the law has been passed, Foster goes to Tommy Thompson and says, would you please get me a waiver so that I can get out of this job? And Thompson does this, gets him waived from the revolving door laws, and Scully goes back to work in the private sector for another healthcare lobbying company at another huge salary. And it's like, where is America on that? And this is, you know, and Republicans are starting to figure this out. You know, I mean, I think a lot of Republicans didn't know this. And certainly, you know, the Democrats didn't know this, and most of America didn't know this. And I think people are starting to go, whoa, we have been taken to the cleaners. And all, you know, with the wink and nod of the Bush administration, because they're getting such big bucks from these guys in campaign contributions.
Let's hope something comes of it before the election. Every little bit helps.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I hope so. I mean, this is not even good legislation for old people. It's just, you know, it's destructive. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the line. Hey, Roy, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. Well, just to kind of piggyback a little bit on Chris's call, the one thing when you were outlining Frist's family's history, you forgot about defrauding Medicare.
And paying millions in fines.
Hundreds of millions of dollars, because they spent, wasn't a fine, $750 million?
No, I don't think it was that high.
It was massive.
Yeah, I know it was a huge fine, but I think it was in the teens of millions. But I don't remember. It was in some time ago. But yeah.
And again, to kind of follow up on what Chris was talking about, because I've already had this conversation with one person today, and they said that that's not true.
What's not true?
The fact that the White House, the administration, misled Congress about the Medicare overhaul. And I run into this all the time.
That's incredible.
You show people, you give them the facts, and they absolutely refuse.
You know what the bottom line is here, Roy?
Accept the facts.
You know what the bottom line here is, Roy, is that people really and truly, and I think this is actually a good sign, people and really and truly want to believe that their leaders are telling them the truth. Most people, I remember when I was a kid, when I was like 7 years old, there was this kid, I was in second grade, you know, and there was a kid who accused me of stealing something that I hadn't stolen from him. And he accused me in front of the class, you know, and the teacher got all involved, and she concluded that I must have stolen it based on what he said. And that night I went home and I was really, really upset. And I talked to my father about this. And he got it, A, that I hadn't done it, and B, that what had happened. And he said, and this is a lesson that has stuck with me my whole entire life. He said, people always judge others by themselves. He said, if somebody assumes that you're a thief, odds are they're capable of being a thief. People always judge others by themselves. People who think about food all the time think that everybody thinks about food all the time. People who think about sex all the time think that everybody thinks about sex all the time, whatever it may be. And so this is where the good news comes. Most people would not, in their own lives, think about lying to people in order to make money, get campaign contributions, hold power, things like that. It's like not part of the equation. I think most Americans are fundamentally honest. And so, you know, they're just horrified by, and they're in such denial of the fact, of the possibility,
That's it. It's the denial. And that, I guess, is what drives me up the wall, is that when the facts are there and they're talking, and particularly, you know, the way he plays this whole religiosity fundamentalist card, well, he's a good Christian man. Doesn't matter that he's killing tens of thousands of people. Doesn't matter that he's scamming the American public out of hundreds of billions of dollars. But he's a good Christian man.
Yeah.
And it's the disconnect. And it
well,
does.
I think it's because people truly want to believe that he is because they are. People are, I think most Americans are fundamentally good people, and they want to assume that their president is too. I want to assume that. You know, and unfortunately, I've confronted enough evidence that it's impossible for me to assume that of George W. Bush any longer. But, you know, I think even when he was first elected, many of us were hopeful, even knowing his history in Texas. But boy, did it, you know, it got obvious really fast. Roy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Yeah,
1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to be on the program. 16 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. And Billy in Santa Cruz, California, is on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom, that was a good call.
Yeah. Well, it was a good point.
Jesus. I said Jesus, and then I was going to talk about Moon. It all fits together.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, he's been around forever. I remember as a young, crazed hippie, I thought that my life's work should be to go after some of these cult leaders and out them and, you know, get into the cult and then write a really good expose.
Yeah.
Well, this guy's already been exposed for over 30 years, and he's still around. And that's sort of what I want to mention. You know, you talked about the anti-Semitic things that he said.
Mm.
But, you know, the default position for America is anti-Semitism. And here's a good example of it. We recently had revealed to us all that Billy Graham was just another garden variety anti-Semite like the rest of them. Do you know what I'm talking about?
In the tapes with Richard Nixon where he
exactly.
made the...
Exactly. You want to tell everybody about that?
You know, I don't remember the exact language
that
he used.
I'll give it to you real quick.
Okay.
In a line, Richard Nixon says something like, the damn Jews, they control the media. We'll have to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, after you're elected, maybe you can do something about that, says Billy Graham.
Yeah.
Not, hey, don't talk that way, but gets right in on it, just jumps in like people always have. And so, you know, let's not be surprised that Moon gets to be an anti-Semite. It's a favorite, recreation of Christianity in general.
Well, it's certainly, there's a long history of anti-Semitism in Christianity. I think,
I mean, even at the top.
Yeah, but know, I, but like, I,
yeah,
and
Graham,
and
so full of respect for Billy Graham.
Yeah, but Billy, I really think that's not the default position of America. I really think, well, in any case, we differ on that. What's your point?
Well, exactly. You know, you talked about religion and denial.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, in fact, exactly what religion is. It's all about denial. Denial, first of all, that as people we don't understand the nature of the universe, and it frightens us a bit. You know, it's denial about other people's humanity. When we're religious, we usually treat other religions badly.
You know, again, you and I disagree here. In my experience,
I'm talking about reality.
Yeah, but no, I'm talking about my reality. You're talking about your reality. My reality is that there is something greater than us. There is something there, and that when you touch
that greater than us has nothing to do with what we think it has to do. This thing we call God and these religions we've built up around it, they all are contradictory. Therefore, none of them can be right, can they?
That may well be, but that doesn't mean that they don't have value, and that doesn't mean that people don't find meaning and joy.
And almost all of it negative.
No.
It's not hard to figure out.
Yeah, I know.
It is religious people who constantly prey upon the rest of us. There were no atheists in the airplanes that struck us that day.
Yeah.
There are no atheists attacking each other. You know,
actually, Billy, you know, recalibrate for just a second. An awful lot of the insurgency in Iraq right now is actually secular, not religious. You know, some of the suicide bombers are probably religious, but it's mostly about nationalism.
As atheists, we don't get together and decide, you know what, let's just, we're right, they're wrong. And as you point out, this is the one thing we do agree on.
Yeah.
What it's about for conservatives, for example, these are people who look into their own shriveled black hearts and project on the rest of us the fact that they are sick, sexually depraved people.
Is that
too clear?
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that one. Billy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Okay, do good. It's 12 minutes before the hour. Yeah, people do judge others by themselves. So, you know, listen to what people say. Listen to what people say. Bela in Los Alamos, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Bela.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Good. What's up?
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what you were saying about the salvage sale up in the Biscuit Project.
Yeah, the timber.
Yeah. I don't know if you folks remember about in 2000, we had a big fire right up here in Los Alamos, the Sierra Grande fire. And I come from a forester background. I'm a firefighter for the Park Service here.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the nutrients in a tree are in the needles and the small sticks. And once a tree is burned, a lot of that nutrients are already in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking the bowls or salvage saling, what they're talking about, actually does not harm the nutrient cycle as much as a lot of people think it does. Though, you know, what Bush is doing up there in Oregon is scary with just the wholesale, you know.
Yeah, they're going to clear cut that. I mean, you know, what does that do to things like, you know, runoff and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the clear cutting of it is totally crazy.
Yeah.
But I think if we go about it and in a smart way, right into the contracts of they have to do erosion control. They have to do address the environmental issues as part of their contract to go in.
Yeah, but that's not what's happening. It's not what's happening, Bela. I mean, you know, that's why the environmentalists are all upset. That's not what's happening.
But at the same time, not to do it at all is just a big of a waste.
Yeah, okay. I'll go along with that. Good point. Thanks for the call. 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner bringing you today's feature story. In a letter released by the U.S. government yesterday, officials admitted awarding an Iraq military contract to a subsidiary of a company under criminal indictment for its role in the California energy crisis. Reliant Energy Solutions East was given $35.9 million to supply U.S. military bases in Iraq with electricity. But Reliant Energy Services, the indicted company, and Reliant Energy Solutions East are both owned by the same parent company and share top officers. The government justified the award by claiming the two subsidiaries are geographically separate entities. Tyson Slocum of Public Citizen outlines Reliant's criminal activities.
It intentionally shut down 4 of its power plants in California, which directly led to the blackouts that deprived hospitals, schools, homes, and just about everybody else in California. And to make matters even worse, Reliant, at the time that it was intentionally shutting down its power plants, was publicly blaming the shutdowns on environmentalists.
Reliant Energy has close political connections to the White House with 3 current and former top executives that are Rangers, people contributing more than $100,000 to the Bush reelection campaign. The company and its political action committee has contributed over $500,000 to the Republican National Committee since 2000.
So this is a highly partisan company, and that may explain why a company that has a criminal indictment against it would still be successful in securing prominent federal contracts.
Public Citizen is calling on the Defense Department to suspend or revoke Reliance contract, as both Enron and Arthur Andersen were barred from federal contracts when they were in.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love is a burning thing.
Isn't Johnny Cash amazing?
And it makes a fiery ring.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We lost one great man and great singer when Johnny Cash left the earth. In a speech to business leaders in India, Representative Jim McDermott of Washington made a remarkable observation. This is a member of the United States Congress. This is a guy who went over to Iraq before the bombing began to check out the situation. Came back and said to the administration, you know, I talked to the weapons inspectors, and I talked to the Iraqis, and I looked around, and I really think we ought to wait on this thing and make sure there's something there, put our troops at risk. And George W., you know, essentially told him, well, essentially said to him the same thing Dick Cheney said to Pat Leahy. And so Jim McDermott in India says, the U.S. has captured Osama bin Laden and for political reasons is waiting for the right moment to reveal it. Interesting. Here's his exact quote. He said, there are already rumors circulating that Osama bin Laden is being held somewhere already, and it's only that they are trying to decide what day they should bring him out. A public statement. Madeleine Albright, the former Secretary of State, on Fox News, of all places, talking to Morton Kondracki, says, and I quote, do you suppose that the Bush administration has Osama bin Laden hidden away somewhere and will bring him out before the election? Well, do you suppose? Interesting how Charlie Reese, speaking of, you know, Republicans turning, the Orlando Sentinel's favorite conservative columnist, just wrote a piece called Vote for a Man, Not a Puppet. He says, people who think of themselves as conservatives will really display their stupidity as I did in the last election by voting for Bush. Bush is as far from being a conservative as you can get. Well, he fooled me once, he won't fool me twice. It is not at all conservative to balloon government spending, to vastly increase the power of government, to show contempt for the Constitution and the rule of law, or to tell people that foreign outsourcing of American jobs is good for them, that giant fiscal and trade deficits don't matter, and that people should not know what their government is doing. Yeah. Amen, Charlie. This is Tom Hartman. Thanks for being with us today. Thanks for joining us on our program. Thanks to Louise for producing our show. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby and RadioPower.org for streaming us around the planet. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics. Please patronize our sponsors and the sponsors you hear on your local radio station. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up, and thanks to you for showing up. See you tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America.